This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Good Friday to you, and a good Masters Friday as well, as I know we'll be watching Tiger Woods again. He shot a 1-under-par 71 in the opening round of the Masters, and I know everybody who was interested in this golf tournament was going to be focusing on whether or not he was going to even get around. Would he finish 8 holes, 9 holes? Could he even get through 18? And if he did get through 18, what would it look like? And it looked like a very, very solid round for a guy that has not played competitive professional golf since for 17 months. We talk about the 14 months between the accident, but remember he'd been off for a few months for the off season before he got into that crash in 2001. And yesterday he did look like a man that was struggling with the pain. But the one thing about Tiger Woods, and this goes back to a lot of the training that he had as a young man, is that he learned to play golf through the pain. He always said, leading up to this week, that it was walking that was going to be the issue. It was not going to be hitting shots. But in the competitive atmosphere, a lot of his shots went awry. But it was the way he was able to recover, the way he was able to steady himself, that allowed him to be in contention for the Masters at 1-under par. Now, today is going to be a different day. He's going to have a different starting time, and who knows what the winds will do. But the one thing about him, and we're going to dissect this a little bit more coming up, the one thing about him is he absolutely knows this course like the back of his hand. Now, you can say that about a lot of guys who have played a lot of rounds at Augusta, but Tiger looks at courses differently. You can get a Fred Couples, for example, and I'm just using him. I'm sure he knows that course very, very well, too. He's been there over 30 years. But Tiger analyzes everything. He knows every hill, every slope. He tries different shots. He's got a memory like an elephant. He knows every single shot he's ever hit and what it does. And you saw a little bit of that yesterday. The way he was able to get out of trouble situations was because he knew where he could miss it. And I think that if he goes out today and has another one of these 1, 2, 3 under rounds, this weekend is going to get really, really interesting. And I am now really thinking that he could be in contention on Sunday. We'll talk more about this round, what it means to golf, what it means to this tournament, and a couple of other guys you should be paying attention to. We'll look at the Masters opening round next on Wake Up Call at Sports Map Radio. Glad you could be with us on a Friday.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It's good Friday to you. As again, Masters getting underway round number 2 today. And I was blown away by Tiger Woods yesterday. I'll be honest. I still don't think he'll win this tournament, but I'm not 100. I mean, by the way, I'm the idiot that picked Justin Thomas to win this, and he shot 76. Maybe if he didn't spend all of his practice time with Tiger and maybe worked on his own game, he would have been in contention. So don't listen to me about any sort of Masters prediction. But I'm looking forward to this weekend if he is absolutely anywhere near contention. I watched all of the back nine that he had yesterday. And what I found amazing was the key to Augusta is, as I was saying earlier, is knowing where to miss your golf shots. Knowing that if you can't reach the green or you have trouble with an angle, where can you miss it so that you can get the best opportunity to get up and down? You saw it on 18. If you watched him yesterday, you saw him on 18. He hit it way to the left. I mean, way to the left. But he was able to get a drop. But he was over 300 yards to the pin. Now, 18 is straight uphill. It goes up and then it just goes uphill. So he was not going to be able to hit the green. So instead of just trying to blast it up there and just hope for the best that maybe it catches a run or something like that, he played a beautiful iron shot, but he played it to a spot that was relatively flat on an uphill that allowed him to then attack and get up and down for par. Those are the kind of things that come with experience. And those are the kind of things that come when you know your skill level and you know you can take advantage of those opportunities when you fail off the tee. And I think for Tiger, that was the key to his round. It wasn't explosive. If you watched him yesterday, the one thing that, and this is the kind of analysis that's coming, he didn't bomb it. Like, he wasn't aggressively hitting that golf ball. He wasn't trying to take a 6-iron 210 yards. But he was really in rhythm. But sometimes that rhythm got out of hand because of the knee and the leg. I think that he has trouble at times getting through that golf ball. Some of his drivers and his fairway shots were really off. But he was consistent enough in getting, not making any mess of any one particular hole, and just methodically getting around the course. You know, getting up and down for pars and making, you know, two putting for pars and things like that. That when the opportunity came at 6, for example, where he stuck it to a foot, he's able to make birdie. On 13, for example, when he's able to two putt for birdie. When he's on 16, then he's able to drain a long putt for birdie. If, as a professional golfer, you are capable of making these kind of shots every now and then, what prevents you from making a good score is if you make these birdies here, don't make double bogeys somewhere else. Don't make a triple somewhere else. And you don't even have to go back far for Tiger Woods' career at Augusta to see where that paid out the most, and that was in 2019. What I remember most about the final round of 2019 wasn't drilling a 5-iron to 3 inches, right? It was the methodical way he went around that golf course, and he let everybody else get tangled up in the trouble, where he just said, you know what? I'm good making par here. You put it in Rays Creek, but I'm not. And I will make par here, and I'll catch up. And then I'll make my birdies on the par fives. And then I'll make my birdies at various holes where I know eventually a putt is going to drop or two. And that's what he kind of did yesterday. He didn't really take advantage of the par fives like I thought he would. I mean, he made par at 15, even though he birdied 13. But nevertheless, this was still a workman's round of golf at Augusta National. And I think that's the thing. He knew that he could be under par if he didn't make the big number. Birdies are easy to come by at Augusta. I know we kind of give this course a lot of reverence, but the reality of it is it's an attackable golf course for professionals. It's open. There's no real rough. You've got on most holes, the fairway's wide enough to hit your drives and not really get into a lot of danger. The par fives, especially on the back nine, are easily attackable. Yep, there is Rays Creek. Yep, there's the pond in front of 15. Yep, the greens are slippery. But again, if you're hitting the ball well, birdies will come. Look at Cameron Smith, the guy who's in second place. He scored a double bogey on the first hole and a double bogey on the 18th. He was 4 over in just those two holes. But he's 4 under for the tournament because he made 8 birdies in between. In the other 16 holes, he made birdies on 50% of those holes. So you can score on that golf course. It's when something in particular doesn't work, right? You don't putt well, your short game is off. That's where you get in real trouble at Augusta. Most of those guys can get around the green in regulation. Right? Most of those guys can be within chipping or putting in 2 or 3 or 1, depending on the hole. But that course will nab you and drag you into hell if your chipping and your putting and your pitching game is off. That's where you get a 76, 77, 78. Tiger knows this. Tiger knows this. So he went around that golf course and went, look, I'm in the woods. Do I hit the heroic shot? Or do I just get this out enough where I know I can get up and down in a certain location? That's what he did. And I'm telling you, it's going to pay off if he's just hanging around a couple of shots off the lead. Because when they talk about the Masters doesn't begin until the back nine on Sunday, that's real. That's become cliche. It's been said every time, but it's real because there's something about that back nine and the danger that lurks at 11 and 12 and 13 and 15 and 16 with the pond in front of it. Those are 5 holes on the back nine where water can easily come into play. Right. And that's the thing. And Tiger is going to go through that. If he does make the cut this weekend, it doesn't blow up today. He's going to know I can get through the back nine without needing to score, 30 under. And I'll watch the others play to the strength of this golf course, which is putting it too close to that creek or putting it too close to that water. It was not an explosive round. He didn't shoot 66, but it felt every bit of the most exciting round because of the circumstances behind it. And I'm not exaggerating here. I mean, I know that we've been talking about this injury and then wondering if he was going to play one or two holes, and then he plays 18. You're probably like, well, is it all that bad? I mean, we don't really know his body. We don't know his pain. I mean, is he exaggerating it? He got around just fine. Well, if you watched his face, he wasn't getting around just fine. He was grimacing a lot. But he has that training that he can get through it. Playing 18 holes of a U.S. Open on a cracked leg, right, was not surprising to those who knew him, because he's got this mental toughness that is beyond anybody else. There are a lot of golfers out there that would have withdrawn from this tournament if they had to deal with that kind of pain. Now, here's the other question. We'll get more into this coming up. Here's more thoughts. If Tiger Woods does well here, does that mean he comes back on tour? Probably not. This is the one place that I think he knows where he can be. Like, he can score here. He knows the course well enough. He knows he can get around okay. He knows the crowd's behind him. He's a former champion. All right, when we come back, we'll hear from Tiger talking about his round and talking about what he thought the 18 holes around Augusta were. Your thoughts coming up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. First round in the books, but it's all about Tiger as we continue with Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us again. Talking Masters and, of course, Tiger Woods, who drew a lot of attention. Boy, those crowds, they love themselves some Tiger, don't they?
Yeah,
my God.
Do.
Holy cow. It's like there was eight, nine deep at some parts. I mean, that is it's really, really tough to see that far back, but people didn't care.
Standing
people
ovation care. At Amen Corner.
Oh, they just went crazy. Everything he did, they were going crazy. They were loving.
Well, it's like I said to you in the break. I mean, did anyone else golf yesterday?
Yeah, I know. I mean, Joaquin Niemann, his playing partner, holed out on 9 for an eagle. I don't think anybody remembers it.
Is there any video of it?
Like, it's only like 6 times in the history of the Masters that there's been a hole out eagle at the 9th hole. And he has one of them, and nobody cares
because
he played with Tiger Woods. And what we remember about 9 is that Tiger punched out from the trees, the ball landed on the green, rolled off the green, and Tiger swore on camera. That's really all it is. That's basically what we've got.
Meanwhile, he had the shot of the tournament.
I said this at the beginning of the week. There's something about this guy where no matter what scandal he's involved in, we do not let him go.
No.
We will not let him go. We will dump LeBron when LeBron says something we don't like, or we'll dump Phil if Phil gets a little ridiculous with his Saudi Golf League comments. Take any ball player, any football player that crosses us in society, and we will dump them and flush them down the toilet. But we just won't do this with Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods is so special to the sport of golf. And I think this is it. Name me a guy that you can honestly say drew in people who don't like the sport normally, don't watch the sport normally, and don't care about the sport normally. Name me another athlete in another sport that does that. Like, there's none. There's zero. Like, if you want to watch Giannis, right? Giannis is his up-and-coming NBA superstar or whoever it is, right? I don't see people going, I hate the NBA. I hate it. But I love Giannis. That guy Giannis is pretty good. So I watch. Nope. People don't do that. In order for you to appreciate MVP level talent, you got to like the sport. You got to be somewhat interested in the sport, right? That even goes to the NFL. If you know somebody who does not watch football normally, can't stand football, does not care about their Sundays needing football, they're not watching Tom Brady. They're not watching Patrick Mahomes. They're not watching Josh Allen. We're not, a non-baseball fan isn't screaming about Shohei Ohtani. A non-baseball fan isn't going nuts for Mike Trout or Bryce Harper. But I know so many people who watch Tiger. It's the only thing they'll watch, the only thing they'll care about, but they watch that guy. They don't know a five iron from a five wood. They don't know what a fade or a draw is. They don't even really get what par means. But they love that guy, and they'll watch him. I mean, the ratings just don't go up when Tiger's in contention. They skyrocket into the next stratosphere. I mean, how in the world do you account for the fact that not that long ago, within a few decades, the winning purse for a golf tournament was 200 grand. Now it's over $2 million if you win golf tournaments. It's not just inflation. It is because the money poured in like a faucet into this sport because of that guy. He shoots 71 yesterday. Here's Tiger Woods saying he feels pretty good.
I've been saving it. You know, that's the thing. You know, I came up here as a test run to see if I could, and I was able to play, as I said in a press conference, 27 holes because we went and played the par three course. And, you know, I felt good, you know, and the whole idea was to keep pushing but keep recovering. And, you know, that's the hard part is, you know, each and every night to recover. And I've been doing that. My team's been incredible, getting me ready. And I figured once adrenaline kicks in and we get fired up and I get into my little world, I should be able to handle business.
I'd like to know who's on his team. Don't you? Like, are these some of the best therapists on the planet? Has he flown everybody in from around the globe? Does he have a cryotherapy machine, like, ready to go on standby in any given moment? Freeze that leg up?
So he has that healing machine from the Book of Boba Fett.
Right, exactly. Like, he sits in that chamber. I mean, my God. Who's his massage therapist? Who's his physical therapist? Who's running checks on the swelling and, I don't know, taking the temperature of certain joints? Who knows? Whatever heck he's doing. Does he have an acupuncturist? Is that what they're called? Acupuncturist? Does he have one of those on staff? I mean, who's on his team?
I mean, it's kind of funny. You do the comparison. Phil Mickelson, he probably has a chef. Probably a couple maids and gardeners and things like that, right?
Right.
Like, Tiger has a whole medical staff.
No kidding.
Like a whole
just
medical wing.
Just hanging out at the Jupiter complex. Just waiting for Tiger. Now, listen.
And he still has to wait in the waiting room for an hour.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Now, look. I'm not downplaying this. And I'm not being cynical here. I want to give a sense of reality. Recovering from this injury is the only thing he has to do in his life. That's it. He doesn't have another job. He doesn't have an office gig he's got to go to. Like when he wakes up in the morning, the only thing he does is, how do I get my leg better? What do I got to do? And he's got the best people in the world telling him, walk on this treadmill for 45 minutes on an incline. Let's go for a walk over here. Let's go try to jog here. Let's lift this weight. Let's lift that weight. From the moment he was starting rehab, this is the only thing that has been on his mind. So he has been putting his body through a lot more in the rehabilitation than a lot of us aren't able to do. You know, some of us go to rehab for like 45 minutes for an injury, and then we got to go back to work, right? And we got to pick up the kids, and we got to go make dinner, and we got to do all this stuff. He's dedicated 14 months of nothing but how do I play at Augusta National in 2022. So let's get working on that every day. So while you are going to your office, while you're taking your business trips, while you are making the budget for your company, whatever it is you're doing, Tiger's lifting weights on that leg. He's walking on an incline. He's starting to stretch it, move it, flex it, heal it, ice it down, heat it up. He's got the best equipment available to him at all times. If he needs to do a straight month of cryotherapy, he'll do cryotherapy. If he needs the best massage therapist in the world, he's got that. Whatever it takes, he's got it. And it's 24 hours a day. But it's still a remarkable 71. It really is a remarkable round. And he's 46 years old. But it's you saw the brains yesterday, man. You saw the guy know that golf course. Here's Tiger once again saying, but this is, you know, the kid got the job done.
I did not have a very good warm-up at all. You know, I hit it awful. And as my dad said, did you accomplish your task? Did you warm up? I said, yes. Now go play. And that's exactly what I did. I, you know, blocked it out, and I felt like, hey, I'm warm. Go play. Let's just go get it done. You know where to put it. Execute each shot. And, you know, as the round built, you know, I was able to get into the red. I got out of there and got to even par. But, you know, made two stupid mistakes at eight back-to-back. Loss of concentration a little bit there. Mm-hmm. But I fought back, and for the day, to end up in the red, I'm right where I need to be.
You know, Jack Nicklaus one time said this. He said, when I go practice, when I go to warm up, he goes, I may hit 15 shots, I may hit 20 shots, I may hit 5 shots. But I want to go to that practice range with an idea of, do I need to do something? Like he said, what his dad told him, you may hit bad shots, but are you warmed up and ready to go? Like, if that's the goal at the driving range, then go out and now play. And that sounded to me like that was the only thing that he wanted to do, was just warm up at the driving range. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to pretend, if you didn't watch his round, I don't want to pretend like it was a great, you know, every shot was a magnificent shot. He was all over the place at times, but he was able to really keep it in check. The big number is the scariest thing at Augusta. That's the thing that blows you up, right? It's the four putts. It's the chips that come back to your feet, right? It's things like that. And Tiger doesn't do that at Augusta National. So can he win this thing? Again, I don't think he can win this thing. I still don't think in the end he's going to win this thing. But he's in a lot better shape today than I thought he was yesterday. When we were on the show yesterday, I wouldn't have been surprised if he was 6 over after 7 and just said, that's enough, I'm out of here. Thank you. But to be 1 under?
It's funny that you said it, because I don't think we thought that would happen, but we definitely didn't think he'd have the round that he had.
Yeah, if he had shot 74, I would have been like, that's great.
For
a guy that's, you know, 14
kind of where we thought he would be. I thought he'd be hovering. I mean, you know, yeah, I know he's 1 under, but I thought he'd be hovering a little bit over par.
Well, look, when I was a teenager and I was learning to play golf, and there was like, I wanted to break certain numbers, right? You want to break 90, you want to break 100, whatever it is. And I remember I had a guy tell me, you know what you want to do that? Just change the pars. Right. Change all the pars. If you want to break 90, for example, that's 18 over par of a 72. So make every par one more and then play to that. So you don't have to be on the green in 2 and a par 4. Be on a green in 3 and 2 putt. You've made your par. And then every now and then you'll get one that's under it and you'll break your 90. Tiger can do that at Augusta. He can look at that course and go, I should be shooting 72 here. The par 5s are accessible. I could get to the par 5s. And so if I could get to the par 5s, this is a par 68, plus or minus. There's no reason why I can't shoot 72. So he goes out there and shoots 71, right? Because he looks at that golf course and says, even walking around where I'm grimacing in pain, I can get birdies. It's what do I do on difficult holes where it's hard to make par? Can I still scramble to make par? And he did. For the most part, he did. And I think that was the most impressive thing. All right, we're going to talk more about the Masters throughout the show today. We got Good, the Bad, and the Dumb coming up in hour number 2. We got Will Gray joining us. We'll talk golf with him. A lot about Tiger. Ron, you said it best. So many other players are worthy of examination, but I think
had good rounds.
Story had great rounds. Cameron Smith had a good round. Sungjae Im is the leader. I mean, he had a fantastic round at 67, but when a guy like Tiger Woods hasn't played golf in 17 months, 14 months removed from an accident, shoots 71 and puts himself near the leaderboard, yeah, he becomes the story. But coming up next, we'll get into the NBA. And the MVP was really special last night. We'll talk about that coming up next on Wake Up Call.
Tony D and Ron Tolver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue at his wake-up call. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Michael in Atlanta. It's going to be tough for him to make that cut tomorrow. It's going to be chilly and a good breeze. So we'll see how he handles it. Tiger always makes the Masters interesting and fun. Yeah, he does. That's the amazing thing about it. I will tell you, I've loved the Masters pretty much my whole life because my father used to go there all the time. And as I started getting into golf, you know, the Masters became my favorite tournament. But it is on an exponential level. And this is the second time I've said this in this hour because of Tiger Woods, because of his presence in the tournament. The golf tournament used to be relatively affordable. In 1990, when I went, the price of a four-day tournament badge was $90. $90 for 4 days to go to four rounds of the Masters.
Not too shabby.
Not too shabby. Now it's over $400.
Hmm. Inflation.
So, and that's reasonable, right? It's $100 to for a day of Masters golf. It's reasonable, but Tiger made it that way. The Masters always was a place, for example, practice rounds, you could just show up. You didn't have to buy, like now you have to be in the lottery for tickets for practice rounds. But back in the day, you used to just show up. It would be like $25. Go in, watch the golf tournament, go home. Yeah, and watch guys practice golf. Now it's like you have to buy a special ticket just to go to that. It's because of Tiger. But Tiger made that tournament even more special because when he won it in 1997, 25 years ago, it drew in so many people who didn't care about golf, didn't know anything about golf, but liked him, liked his story, and liked what he was doing, that it became a destination for people who wouldn't have ever dreamed of going to Augusta, never in their lives would they even consider going to the Masters before he got there. And because he got there, it's on another place. The only, I'll tell you this, and it's not quite the same, Ron, but I'll tell you just through my experience, the only other athlete, if you want to call it that, but I mean the only other sports personality that I can think of in my lifetime that was so good at what they did that it drew many, many people to a sport they never thought they would be interested in, that was Jeff Gordon. Jeff Gordon is probably the closest.
Yeah. Because that's actually a great analogy because, like, even for me, I'm a California kid. NASCAR is not that big in California, but when right. he started racing, that, you know, we kind of got more interested into it.
Yeah.
Opened the door for Jimmy Johnson, who was, in fact, from California.
There was a period of time where NASCAR, you can go, like, to the old schedules, right, the old schedules, and you'd be like, two races in North Wilkesboro, North Carolina, two races in Rockingham, North Carolina, Atlanta, Talladega, South Carolina at Darlington, Virginia at Martinsville. Like, it was so southeast oriented. They would race at Riverside. They would race at Watkins Glen. But then there was an explosion of tracks around the country that was starting to be built in the 90s. I know because I went to Las Vegas pretty much specifically because I was in the NASCAR media community and they were building a racetrack out there. But then you had the California Speedway in Fontana. You had Chicagoland Speedway. You have a Speedway in Kansas. You have New Hampshire International Speedway.
One in Goodyear, Arizona. Outside Phoenix.
Phoenix, Arizona. There's Texas. There's a track in Texas. So there's all these tracks. And now all of a sudden this national feel for the sport, and a lot of it was when NASCAR latched on to Jeff Gordon. He was young, he was winning, he was taking on Dale Earnhardt, and he was, you know, becoming really popular, and he was drawing in this new audience. In fact, the most famous, one of the more famous headlines was NASCAR being on the cover of Sports Illustrated talking about how hot it was, how it was exploding, and Jeff Gordon's car was on the cover. Tiger Woods was like that as well. I mean, he was young. He went to the Masters. He becomes the first black man to win at the Masters, a place where, you know, had a bad history with that. And then all of a sudden, he's exploding onto the scene. He's winning everything. He's winning all these majors, and people are drawing into him. So that's one of the reasons I don't think as a country we're ever going to let him go. Like, no matter what controversial thing ever happens to him, we don't care. Like, we love watching him do what he does best. So,
I mean, it's safe to say he's probably the most important person to ever swing a golf club.
Without question. Without question. I mean, you can talk about whether or not he's, like, who's the best golfer, Jack or Tiger.
I mean, I'm not saying that.
No question. Tiger took the sport. Arnold Palmer had more of an influence in the growth of golf than Jack Nicklaus did, right? Arnold Palmer was the everyman. He was the guy that in the 60s, 50s and 60s, really took golf on television and whatnot. And Jack benefited from that. Tiger, forget it. It was miles ahead. Ahead of those guys.
He made it popular. He made it cool.
I mean, I played golf and it wasn't cool.
Oh, it was your father's sport. Cool. That's how it was always looked. It was your father. You know, and I remember the moniker, like, you know, business deals are done on the golf course. I don't even know if that was, I mean, I know it was 100% true before Tiger, but it became more prevalent after Tiger.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Speaking of doing good things, Nikola Jokic last night for the Denver Nuggets. Whew. Last night, he had 35 points, 16 rebounds, and 6 assists in a game against the Memphis Grizzlies, in which the Denver Nuggets won, clinched at least the sixth spot in the Western Conference playoff standings. But with that output, he became the first player in NBA history to have 2,000 points, 1,000 rebounds, and 500 assists in a season. This guy won the MVP last year without those numbers, and he's going to win it again with these numbers. Yep, Giannis, Joel Embiid, you can look at those guys and be legit MVP candidates. But Nikola Jokic of the Denver Nuggets is going to win this thing again. Mike Malone, obviously, he's going to stick up for his guy, but he's like, Malone said the MVP race isn't even a competition. Now, again, I know he's sticking up for his guy, but he's like, there are other great players. I'm not saying they're not great players, but what Jokic has done this year with this team, everything we've gone through, it's just incredible. Now, we talked about this with Ja Morant, right? Ja Morant was having a great season. But Memphis, despite this two-game losing skid, has won without him. Not only they've won without him, they've pretty much cruised without him. They won like 7 in a row before they've lost both of these games on the road to Utah and Denver. But they're not even sweating it, right? Jokic has taken this team to the sixth seed in the Western Conference without Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr. He is taking this Nuggets team and dragging them into a decent spot into the postseason. And again, I know Joel Embiid is saying, I'll never get any run, blah, blah, blah. Well, it's because Jokic is putting up historical numbers. I'm sorry, that's just the way it is. I think if you're an MVP voter in the NBA, it is going to be impossible to overlook this hallmark of a season. I mean, how do you not give the MVP to a guy that has put up these kind of numbers, 2,000 points, 1,000 rebounds, and 500 steals? What are we talking about? And here's the thing. I almost made a futures bet a couple months ago on Joel Embiid. Because when Embiid got Harden, his numbers were great. And I thought, oh, he'll win this. But I can't forget about Jokic. Now, do I think the Nuggets go far in the postseason? I don't know. I think in the playoffs, it's kind of a different beast. You can sort of revolve your game about, all right, that guy can get 35 as long as nobody else gets, you know, a legitimate scoring opportunity. I think there are teams that can play Denver in a 7-game series and beat them. I think the team in the West I'm watching out for, Ron, I'm kid you not, I think there's this one team that I would be really worried about, even if I was Phoenix.
The Lakers.
Oh, I wish, huh? It's Dallas.
Yeah.
Dallas is playing good basketball. They've won 7 of their last 10.
Kind of like North Carolina right now, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. They are. They've got the fourth spot. It means they get home court advantage in the first round at least. But unless Golden State's got to start getting healthy, I think they can beat Memphis in a 7-game series. I'd be worried about them against the Suns. But I think Dallas can play really good basketball. Denver, I don't know. Denver looks to be like a second-round exit. Remember, they almost went to the finals. Remember they went to the remember they were down 3-1 in every one of their series in the bubble at Disney World 2 years ago?
Yes.
And then they lost to the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals. Now, that was the bubble. I don't even know how to process the bubble. Do you?
Yes, like, it was an NBA title.
Yeah, an NBA title. You're the wrong person to ask.
No, you know what? I look at it the same way you do. It was a unique experience. They won the 2020 NBA tournament.
Right. I'm not taking it away from him. It's a legit title. It's probably harder to do it in the bubble than it was to do it during the regular.
It probably was. I mean, you know, but at the same time, I don't know if it was, because part of the allure of an NBA Finals is the travel. And especially when you have West versus East, you know, you have a West Coast team going all the way to the East Coast, an East Coast team coming all the way to the West Coast. And there are disadvantages to that. And you have home crowds, and this was none of that. It was just a basketball gym. They were all in the same spot. I don't know if it was easier or harder. I mean, it was definitely unique and different. But I don't want to slap an asterisk on it, but it's one of those situations where you kind of do contemplate it.
I wouldn't slap an asterisk. I give them the credit they deserve for going through a tournament and winning it, and especially a tournament that was set up like that. But I think you're right. I think travel, the days off in the early rounds, really, you know, because it really does allow coaches to just – because the only thing they care about is who they're playing, right? Coaches aren't trying to anticipate a road trip and advanced scouting and any of that nonsense. The only thing they're caring about is you, right? So when I'm playing you, and it's all I'm focusing on, watching every film – every piece of information, I'm dissecting everything, and I'm thinking about you all the time for 3 or 4 days, right? And then till because that first round, you play on, like, Monday, and then you don't play again until, like, Friday, right? I mean, it's like there's a lot of time to process it. But they played, like, every other day in this thing. But I don't know, you know, like Miami. Like, Miami is the number one seed in the East, right? Well, 2 years ago, they played in the finals. But even with Jimmy Butler and whatnot, you felt like, well, are they really the number one team in the East, right? But now they are. And the same thing with Denver. It's like Denver made it to the Western Conference Finals. They were down to Utah and beat them. I forget, there was another team that they beat. Clippers. They beat the Clippers, and then they lost to the Lakers. But is Denver one of the best teams in the West? Not really. Not really. And again, they've been dealing with injuries, but they've got the league MVP, and I think is going to win the MVP again this year. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Good, the Bad, and the Dumb coming up in hour number two. We'll also get in some opening day news in hour two as well from the world champions, because Ronald Acuna Jr. is doing the one thing athletes tend to do when they put their foot in the mouth. Backtrack. We'll have that story coming up for you as we continue with Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Hour number two, we got the good, the bad, and the dumb. Will Gray is going to join us during the show this morning. What, 8:40?
Yes.
Central time?
8:40 Eastern.
So next hour.
Next hour.
See, I should pay attention to the times that you give me for this guest.
You know, whatever.
You know, well... I'm not trying to be lazy or anything. It's just it's a Friday. What do you want from me?
I believe if it was 9:40 Eastern, he is on the golf course, and that could be the last time he's ever invited to Augusta.
That's true.
If he was talking
That's
to
right.
us.
That's right.
And we don't want that.
Yeah,
we don't want
these
that to
guys.
Happen.
These guys. Is there a media center? I've never covered the Masters, so I don't know. Is there a place where they can make phone calls?
I gotta imagine there's a tent somewhere, right?
Right. Well, there's probably no. There's a center. But I wonder if you can make phone calls in there.
Well, no, but that's what I'm saying. I mean, I can't imagine these guys constantly having to go to the parking lot.
Right.
Especially, you know, the TV broadcast guys, because they're always on the phone.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, hold on. I got to walk, you know, a mile down the road, down the drive to get outside Augusta so I can call you.
I was in the International. It used to be a golf tournament in Colorado. And if you're familiar with golf, this was a tournament. It stopped many years ago, but it was the weird Stableford scoring system tournament. It was the one that, like, you got points for birdies and eagles and stuff like that. It was fun. It was a different golf, but I was doing radio in the Radio Row area of it. There was just these, like, booths that we could have, and you could get a golfer to come on with you. Like, they'd be in the media center, and then you're like, hey, you want to come on? There was this golfer named John Senden, and he came in to... He wasn't super famous, but he was kind of playing pretty well. But he came into the studio. We were on a break. And my engineer plugged in the headphones for him. And when he plugged in the headphones, he did that thing where, like, you got a lot of feedback right away. Like, we went on the mic, and he got a lot of feedback. So he got this, like, screeching noise in his headphones.
Ew.
We've all had it in this business, but we're all used to it. He wasn't used to it, right? So he got this, like, feedback right in his head. So he was Australian, so he had to take the headphones off, and he's like, oh, mate, that really stung. And I'm like, oh, man, I'm sorry about that. And the engineer was like, he's a kid. He was like, oh, man, I'm really sorry. He's like, no problem. Put the headphones back on, and it happened again, but it wasn't as loud. He goes, oh, my God, can I just do this without the headphones? And I'm like, yeah, no problem. So he was like one of the leaders. He was like third or fourth. The next day, he had an unbelievably crappy round. And people, my listeners, were accusing me of giving him, like, vertigo and things like that.
No,
like,
I mean,
what happened to John Senden? He shot, like an 80.
Because, you know, here's the deal. His caddy was giving him information. He couldn't hear it.
It's like, did you mess around with his equilibrium? Like, he's making five birdies and an eagle on day one, and he's hitting in the trees, and he's making double bogeys in round two. Your fault.
This caddy's sitting here saying, I think you should go with the 8-iron here.
Exactly.
He's like, give me the 5-wood.
He's probably walking by it afterwards. He's walking by going, everybody, don't do interviews with that cat right there. Messes up with your head. Screws up your hearing. Can't hear a thing after that. Couldn't even play golf. Thanks, whoever you are, Mr. Nobody. Well, now he's Mr. Nobody. I've never heard of him after that.
You ruined his career.
I ruined his career with my audio problem.